As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
In this special episode, we interview the band Sego. Stick around till after the credits to hear their song, Neon Me Out.
1, 2, 3.
And welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and today with me, always, my lovely co-host, Lou. But today's special guest, we have the band Sego with us today. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the studio.
Yes. Yeah.
You guys want to introduce yourselves for the audience?
Yeah, I'm Spencer.
Raise your hand, maybe, because...
Hey, I'm Spencer from Sego.
I'm Thomas from Sego.
I'm Alyssa from Sego.
I'm not from Sego.
I'm not from Sego either.
But we're all Sego.
We're all Sego.
And what was the title of the last album again?
Sego Sucks.
Got it.
So just in case you're wondering, it's easy to find.
Yeah,
and we're a big fan of these guys. Our intern Maxton kind of brought them together into the studio, kind of rearranged everything. But fun fact about Sego, I might be one of the only few people in LA that has watched them perform live multiple times in Utah.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, people know on the show that I lived in Utah from 2016 to 20-ish, like 4 years. Are you guys from Utah? Like, how did that start?
Yeah, Tom and I grew up close to where you were going to school, and... we started as a different band down there, which brought us to LA. This is like the trek.
Was it called Sego before?
No.
There was a different band. It was called Elizabethan Report.
Oh, yeah.
Elizabethan Report.
And then we changed, which was changed to Islip's Eyes, which then lead singer...
We broke
got
up.
Got married.
Got married, broke up, got it.
And then we started Sego out of the ashes of that, and Tom and I... kind of persevered through that transition, and then we met Derp down here.
Spencer, after that band broke up, like a year after, we kind of played around with other friends and like kept ourselves busy, but he had this stockpile of music and songs, and he's like, I don't know what to do with it, and like we were, it's like, you should just do your own thing with it, and I'll do you one better, I'll play drums for it.
Yeah,
hey. Keep it
going. I'm in.
So Sego was kind of originally a solo thing? Is that
not necessarily, but he never stops writing, and so he had a bunch of music that he'd been writing that he didn't know what to do with, didn't have a place for it, and I was like, well, let's just start a band, let's just do a thing.
It was originally, to be honest, I was trying to get Tom to sing in the band because
because I got the stash for it.
Yeah,
we would have never known because of the mask. It's a good thing it fell off.
Be safe.
But I couldn't quite talk him into it, and so I ended up by default being the lead singer, but it wasn't by design. It just kind of happened that way. This is the first time I've ever really, I don't know if you would call it singing in Sego, but this is the first time I've been a vocalist in a band, really. So this is, you know.
Which I want to talk about that in a second, but before we do that, I want to talk about, when did Alyssa come into play? Because I know you play bass.
I do.
And you were a later addition.
I was. I met them, I don't know, 5 years ago, I think. I think I was like 18, and I met them through a mutual friend, Alex Jones, who used to, like...
He was responsible for bringing us to L.A.
Yeah.
He's our first manager.
Is not he a manager? He's
not
manager.
That Alex Jones. Different Alex Jones.
Different Alex Jones.
It's not the famed Alex Jones, but the our famed Alex Jones.
Yes. He's famous to us.
Yes.
Alex was the one who got us all connected, and he literally just... He knew me from a band that I played in Santa Barbara with Maxton, actually. And Maxton and I played music together since I was like 11 or 12. But we had a band, and Alex Jones was helping us out with some stuff. And then fast forward a couple years, Alex texted me randomly, and he's like, "Hey, do you want to audition for this band called Sega? It's my buddy Spencer and Tom. They're starting a project." And I honestly immediately was like, "No, I'm okay. Like, I don't have enough time for any for a project." Yeah. And then I listened.
I'm in the caverns.
I was like, "I'm in the caverns." Yeah, exactly. I was like such a freaking egotistical 18-year-old. And then
You're actually making money too.
Well, and then I listened to it, and then I was like, I just started crying in the car, and I was like, "Oh my god! Like, I need to be in this band." And then I texted him. We met.
You auditioned?
I auditioned. They broke my heart.
We passed, yeah.
They said no. And
after all that mental turmoil of whether to audition for the band.
I know. It was like, yeah, I auditioned, and then they chose somebody else for the tour. Then, like, a year went by, and I was, like, secretly just sulking in my room, just, like, looking at everything, just like, oh, man, I want to be in this band still. And then this, I don't know. It happened again, and they had another spot, and they're like, "Hey, you want to try one more time?" And I was like, "Yeah." And then I got it.
There you go.
Perseverance.
It's so fun.
I like
fun.
To say that we got it.
Hey. Come on.
That's right. Band love. But I'm really glad. This is one of the first times where I don't know y'all personally close enough, where some of the other artists that have been on the show have been friends or total strangers. But I've actually seen you guys perform live and can say that your show and just like your album, it sounds crazy. And because it is the Mixing Music Podcast, we want to talk about that. We want to play one of your songs later. We're going to edit it in. But I wanted to talk about your music. How would you describe, before I offend anybody by trying to describe your sound, Spencer, can I ask you, how do you describe your sound? What is going through your head?
I mean, I think we endearingly refer to it as art punk by non-punk non-artists.
Yeah.
I feel like that's about as close as I can get.
Yeah.
I get that. Like, emotionally, it's kind of punky.
Yeah, it's punky, but I can't really wave the banner of punk because I feel like that's a very intense loyalist community. And
sometimes a little too loyal.
Yeah, a little, you know, it's a tight, it's a highbrow world. And then artists who, it's hard for me to consider myself like an artiste, but I feel like this comes from a place of like slightly more organized intent. And so it has like that, but yeah, I would never refer to myself to friends as an artist necessarily. So, yeah, that's about it. How about alternative? We'll just say that.
Yeah, there you go. Alternative, like an alternative rock kind of thing.
Yeah,
always like
your
that
vocals,
one.
Like you said already, like, your vocals fit very well. It's kind of like you're not really rapping, but it's kind of lazy, and you're, like, doing almost poetry just on the stage to rhythm, and it's got this kind of, like, the vocals in Cake are very similar. And to be honest, I don't hear anybody else doing it. Because if you did it a little bit more intensely, it'd be more like hip-hop.
Right.
But when I hear you, it's just like enjoying the show. Like, you're just enjoying what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's not really like, rapping.
It's kind of, more of like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a flow, though. I've actually had a friend who's working on a hip-hop project and loosely asked if I would do a verse.
He's got bars.
And
I bet he does. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like my type of verse isn't the kind that you just throw into a beat, but.
I definitely feel like you can at least open a beat.
Yeah,
like you can narrate the song somewhat.
Well, you know that part before they start the verse where they're just talking about the headphones and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that's my headphones up.
Yeah,
I'm just talking about the surrounding. Like, turn the headphones up, yo, everybody, y'all ready? Okay, and then I'm out. That's my verse.
Be like dropping David Byrne into a DMX track.
Yeah, exactly.
But you gotta sneak in, like, is this even the right tempo?
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh my god.
So I think you guys are really awesome guests for the show. Not only are you a genre of music that we don't typically talk about, and Lou specializes more than I do within the rock realm, but you guys really have amazing productions. Now, I assume it's partially help from outside people doing it yourself, but in your records in general, I notice a pattern of an amazing use of hypercompression, distortion, filters, and just kind of like, it's really aggressive, and it's very creative, but it's also very hi-fi. Like, it's not in a way that it's like super duper lo-fi. There's elements of that, but I think that, like, honestly, you guys are doing this really cool lo-fi thing, but in a very modern way, in a very hi-fi kind of way. What kind of, like, influenced your sound in that sort of sense? And what kind of tools or, like, distortions or sounds were you kind of going after?
Well, actually, I feel like I heard interesting interview with one of the guys from The Replacements, and he kind of expressed it in a very articulate way, where they were crediting all this, like, you just had this lo-fi sound, and you guys brought this really, you kind of ushered in this generation of lo-fi kind of punk records, and you know, what did you think about, like, why'd you do it this way or that way? And his answer, I thought, was pretty novel, which was, he's just like, we were just poor, you know? we would have done a Steely Dan record if we could have, but we, you know, didn't have the money, so it just came out that way. And in a lot of ways, that is kind of like Sego. It's like, yeah, you are limited. We're not in crazy studios all the time. We do a lot of self-production, and so you have to get creative with that already. And so, you know, because I feel like for the recording purists, you can hear like someone trying to fake a good record really quick.
Uh-huh.
But if you're kind of working within your own parameters and being creative with that, it comes out, I feel like, a little bit more genuine.
Yeah.
And so you take that, and then we collaborate with different producers and studios to time to that. Then takes whatever our sound is and elevates it to a slightly more acceptable level. And I feel like that's kind of the grand cocktail of what happens.
That's so beautiful. And actually, on a previous episode about this, I say that usually, like with local artists or artists that are just starting, the only thing that I feel is a lot of, like, try-hard energy. And that turns me off to music. Like, when you're really trying to be someone else and it's like you're losing yourself in it because of it, I feel the total opposite with y'all's music. It's so real. Spencer, you're just so you. Everybody on the stage is honestly just having a good time. And even the records, the recorded productions, the studio productions, sound like somehow you guys did an amazing job reflecting that emotion where it's like so real, but it's also very well thought out. Like, it is well produced. Like, it was, you didn't, like, I know you're saying that, like, within your limitations, but I know that you spent time on that shit, you know?
Right.
And, like, I think it's, like, absolutely beautiful how it all came together. Tom, Alyssa, I want to ask you guys, like, kind of, what did you play in part of the process of the recording of the album? How did it turn out versus the way you wanted and expected it to turn out at the beginning?
Well, one thing, it's like going with, like, the punk thing, even though we are the least punk people you'll ever meet. But, like, we
eloquently punk.
Like, what he was saying with the contrast of, like, punk artists, blah, 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 it's like, we definitely give a shit about what we're doing, and we tried our best to, like, know what we're doing, and when we're in the studio, we're coming up with ideas. We also base a lot of it on performance, and, like, the feeling of, like, you know, I'll do a drum take, and it might not be, like, the most perfect take, but the feeling of that take will be, like, encompasses the idea, and, like, a lot of it's song by song, and, like, some songs, it's like, let's just use program drums on this song, but like let's go like see what like let's play live drums on this song, and like never really go for perfection, but just like a good take of like it feels it's like serving everything and it has a character, or like I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I try not to think about it too much, even though I want it to be the best it can be. But like I try to just immerse myself in the energy of that song or the vibe of that take, and just let it kind of happen. I improvise a lot in the studio, even though I think a lot about what I want to do. But like I'll let the take kind of just speak for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something I try to do because I'm sick. I didn't come from like a perfectionist drum background where it's like Steely Dan drum, like I grew up playing like Blondie and B-52s and New Order, where it's kind of like all over the place, but like beautifully, like perfectly all
yeah,
over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about you as queen of the low end in the band? Gosh. There you go. What do you feel about like kind of the direction, how you started it and how it ended up? Kind of like,
I mean, for me, I think it's a little bit different because I honestly wasn't really a part of the recording process and
until
really recently. And,
which we'll talk about your recent records in a second.
Yeah, but. Which is so it's different for me because I feel like in most of my time in the band, I've been obviously a part of the band and a player, but I'm also kind of, I get to be like this outside listener as well, and kind of like, they wrote a lot of the stuff before I even was a part of the band, and so a lot of Sega Sucks was already kind of done, and I was kind of excited just to listen to it and like give my opinions on it and get to experience the production world for the first time with this like really really cool record, and then I get to learn it and play it and kind of add my own thing to it as well. But I'm still learning about production stuff from these guys, and these guys are both kind of like, I view them as my teachers and my mentors in production because I know really nothing about it, and because I'm just starting in it. But with this new record that we were writing, it was really cool because I got to really be a part of like from scratch, like the process. And I learned a lot, and a lot of my insecurities came out, and these guys pushed me really hard, and it was amazing because I got to kind of see how it works when everyone's writing together, the way we just kind of try to make it as organic as possible, kind of like what Tom's saying. I feel like that always comes across in the records where we try to make it fit live as it does in the production, because I hate personally when you listen to a record and you're like, man, that record was amazing. And then you see the band live and it's like completely different products. But for us, I feel like we have that sometimes, but we can also meet in this middle where it's like, oh yeah, it's different from the album, but in like a way better way. Or we try to like be way better live and use the records as like a little example for something and like expand on that musically. But I'm still learning. I'm still figuring it out. And they're teaching me.
I think
I don't know how to do any of this
from
stuff.
From a production level, I feel like Derv brings her, I think...
Her nickname's Derv, by the way.
Yeah,
Derv. So if we
Everyone calls me Derv.
If we refer to her as Derv, we're talking to Alyssa.
I think your insecurities ended up being one of your biggest assets on a production level early on, because since Derv didn't really know a lot of that world, it actually brings kind of an unbiased outlook, and so she listens more with her ears and just, like, conceptually hears things that are working or not working for her, whether or not she can say what that is.
Yeah.
But I feel like both Derb and my brother Robbie actually has been kind of a listener guinea pig, because he is a involved in production in any way, but he's always a good third-party person that kind of will give you an honest feedback, not based on any, like, you know, minutia of, like, technicalities and all that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And actually, I want to kind of dive more into, I think the most beautiful and the most hardest part about artists is finding the balance of getting over your own insecurities, right? And I want to talk about that, but I know that the listeners are often wanting to know technical details. So before we talk about what I want to talk about, which is getting over that, the emotional side of it, is I want to hear some technical stuff. Like, what was one of the coolest things production-wise you had to do, or like the weirdest, out of world, like new thing that you've ever done in the studio, or anything
accidents? Or maybe random piece of equipment you found that you never thought you'd ever use.
The Lay's potato chips.
What? I want to hear this.
That happened.
That happened. Remember
Lay's
that?
Potato chips.
Yeah, I forgot what.
Because
yeah.
I know they're like at June Audio. Also, they have Lay's. Like the tiny little speaker sometimes that Scott likes to blend in with. Like, what are some cool production stuff?
Well, we work with this guy in Canada.
Yeah, Dave.
Who used like old retrofitted like World War II, like what were they? Like the like just like ammo box cases that he put like compressors in. Yeah, he built all of his own stuff. He used like a PC that was running on like Windows 95.
Yeah, he actually had an old G5 from like 2006, and he doesn't upgrade the Dave, sorry, I'm giving away your secrets.
We're not even talking about that guy. This is somebody else.
he never really upgraded his computer, and he doesn't have the internet at his studio, so it never really like got upgraded and got outdated. So he uses this super old. It's basically just a tape machine computer, and he builds all his own equipment. But I feel like Dave actually. Well, from like a technical, it's more of a production standpoint.
And that's cool too.
His outlook on production, in particular the drums, was wild. He would wind up Tom. It would start at about 8 at night.
No, it would start at about like 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, you try to start at 8.
Right. You listen to a bunch of Canadian deep house records and shit and get like. You know, we'd get in a zone and then be like, oh, I'd be like, all right, well, I'm ready to go. Are you ready to go? Be like 5 hours later. It's like, oh yeah, let's get in there and get to work.
And then he would basically have Tom play every possible genre or version of the song on the drums.
He's like, give me a Zeppelin version. Now give me a Samba version. Now give me a Zydeco version. Now give me a reggae version.
Give me Ringo. Give me
jazz. Give me this. And we do like 6 or 7 takes of just completely different genres, styles of drumming, and then I would sit back there with him and we'd like cut it up and like
he would take it through and blend it in, and so so about half of Sego Sucks was up in Canada with
that
Dave.
Guy
and so some of the like on the track Whatever Forever, the drum,
that's actually the one I was telling him of our new album. I really like that one.
Oh, thanks. Well, you'll notice that the drums follow very few through lines. It's just all over the place, and that's because we followed kind of Dave's technique of like producing a drum sound throughout the thing, and he just pick moments, and he's all about the moment, and then you just switch fully to the next section. So
that's interesting.
So it's hard to it's hard to recreate live for sure. Yeah.
But it's a fun challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I would play it all, and like I even had a hard time. Like I don't know, like. I kind of want to just get one good take, but he kind of, like, shifted my mind of, like, no, like, look at how, like, there's all these awesome moments that happen within all these takes, and they're all different. Like, let's find a way to blend them together. Now we got something interesting here. That's,
absolutely.
Like, that's not typical.
I imagine as a drummer, that's also kind of a timing challenge to perform live.
Yeah, I mean, when we got the first, like, cuts of the record, I was like, we went up to Canada and made a Wings album. This is all over the place. Yeah. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. But it makes it funner to play live, actually, after learning how to, like, blend all those different parts together and, like, connect it all. Yeah.
It's
fun.
It's crazy. And the ending mixes as well did everybody who mixed that last album, was it one person? Was it a couple people? Or?
It was a few. So Dave did everything up in the Canada tracks.
So he took you all the way to the end, even post-production.
Yeah. Yeah, he housed
like
us in his house, and we. You know,
oh,
we
it was a full on vacation.
No, it was January
in Canada.
Oh,
no, that
it was
no
about
vacation.
-30 the whole time.
And he only had radiant heat. And
barely
so
any heat in the house.
Oh shit!
It was the exact opposite of the Chili Peppers doing Blood Sugar Sex.
Yeah. it was coats indoors a little bit, but he mixed a handful of tracks. We had. Finn Bjornsson from kind of the Cascade camp, he did one. I think Scott Wiley from June Audio did a few.
And Sonny
DiPieri did one. So it was a bit, it was a bit of a mix of end products throughout the whole process for sure.
How did you kind of, I mean, like as an artist and producers, how would you kind of say the difference in styles that you heard as far as mixing goes between the different mixers? Or was that something that you never really cared about, to be honest?
The first time I ever cared about it was in our old band, because we always self-produced everything.
Because Spencer and our bass player were like went to school and like knew how to produce and record and all that.
Engineer, you know.
And
the
Studio Y.
I don't know if you had the same experience, but you think you're good until you realize that you're not, and that sounds oversimplified, but we thought we were good at what we did until we went up. We recorded at London Bridge Studios up in Seattle, which we were just excited because Pearl Jam did
Allison Chains, Mother Love Bone.
It's all just the grunge studio. But they had a big API board and a beautiful room and, you know, just all the right mics. And we remember when we came home, we were ABing just the roughs of all these songs that we had done. And there was, like, it's hard to describe, but there was just a different weight to them and a more of a depth to them. And all of a sudden, our mixes felt super flat and thin. Whereas before, like, you don't know what you're missing until, you hear it back to back. And you're like, why do these sound so much better and heavier? It felt like they had, like, more dimension to them. And so I feel like going through that process, we found a mixer up in Utah who then we'd never paid anyone to mix. And I don't, do you know Mike Raskelly?
I don't know Mike Raskelly.
He did our old record, but he did like the first Moth and the Flame record. He did the Mido record.
He was kind of the go-to guy back then for those great records in Provo.
Yeah, he did the Polytype. He did a bunch of these really cool kind of transitional era records for Provo bands. And that was the first time I realized that, dang, like, Paying for a good mixer is worth it. It's worth the money. It's worth the investment, unless you're like, you know, obviously yourself a great mixer willing to put that time in. But we didn't realize that level. So ever since then, it kind of screws with your head because you're chasing that constantly.
It's almost like a drug. Like you're just totally addicted to it. Like once you hear a comparison, because when you don't compare, you don't realize how good a mix is sometimes.
Oh, man.
Once you hear, like, what it used to sound like, what it sounds like now, that probably fucked with your mind a little
bit. I think
bit.
It's case by case, too, because sometimes we paid for mixes that were, like, the vibe wasn't right. And, like, we were like, oh, how we did it, even though we might not be as, you know, elite as this, but, like, that song probably didn't need that much.
And that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, and that's a hard way to, like, you're, like, in that middle road, like, oh, shit, I don't know.
Yeah, I know me and DK spoke about that recently, about, like, you know, finding the right fit sometimes. It's not even that they're necessarily bad. They just don't understand what you're after.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, the best mix that they can give you is not at all what the artist wanted. And
well, we just went and did, for just a song, we went and did some drums at the studio, and it was awesome. But, like, when we were listening back to it, we're trying to figure out how to find the mix for this one particular song that nobody's heard of yet and probably won't. But we keep going back. We're like, I don't know, like, what we did originally just by ourselves kind of, like, fits better, sounds better. And, like, the drums do sound amazing with this guy that we went and paid for, and he's an awesome dude, very talented guy. But, like, we still are, like, caught between this, like, I don't know, like, the vibe is there for what we did, but the drums sound bigger than this, but, like, where do we go?
Yeah, how far do you chase?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you never really know,
I guess.
I got a quirky
production thing we did once to kind of loop back to your original question.
Oh, yeah, we deviated.
It's more nerdy. This is what I found in production is the demo-itis thing is real, and to combat that, I just try to record the demos as best we can, and then we just roll that into actual songs. So a lot of, like, our original tracks were, there are a few that are, the vocals are actually just, like, recorded, like, into the laptop mic, and it ended up being the right vibe, and it's kind of thin, high-pass sound.
I'll clap to that.
Yeah.
I'll clap to that. That's, like, awesome.
We tried to redo it with, like, the right mics and the right everything. It's like, you know, it kind of misses the vibe. And it leads itself to, I don't know if you've realized this, but, like, it's all about additive production. And so if you have a cool nugget, whatever it is, like you add a synth, we've had plenty of things that were play savers, and then you build a whole track around it, and then you don't realize how the other stuff really needs that part. And so when you try to remove it and do it like the right way, it never sounds right ever. Mm-hmm. And so we just, it's been like a turnaround trying to like figure out like, okay, like if I do this, it's going to be the end. Like I'm not going to replace this at the end because I know that's going to be the case. But one was same thing. We recorded there was a cool sounding guitar and, but it was just an electric guitar with like just a cell phone or something. And without an amp, you know, just in the room. And
really? So you just recorded the cell phone?
So it ended up going back and recording the actual guitar with, like, a Neumann. But, like, it's just, like, in the room, like, that plunky, crappy electric guitar in the room sound. But it's like, well, I guess this doesn't need an amp because, again, we've built around it. And so it's like it needs to be plunky and kind of harpsichord sounding. And so we're just going to stick
really
with that.
Cool.
So it's like, and that, I think that goes for anything like acoustic or electronic or whatever, is just like that additive production order. I think I've found that like, you got to take those steps seriously because it's really hard to like remove those building blocks later on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. As we kind of wrap up, I kind of wanted to ask a little bit more about the future record. So, Alyssa, or Der, right? can you tell us a little bit about the two new records that came out and what that was a part of? I heard it got split up. Like, what is...
Yeah, there's Life with Pam, and...
That's it.
Yeah, we did Life with Pam, and... Well, Life with Pam was fun, and that one was good because... we decided to release it as a 16-minute, 40-second chunk of music, and that's how it's meant to be listened to, and there are some singles that are released from it, but...
And Bandcamp only.
Oh,
and so,
that's where that 16-minute long record is. Okay.
Yeah, so it's on Bandcamp only because we wanted to make sure that people would go listen to it as a whole, as one, all the way through, instead of having to go get the singles and, like, just picking whatever you want to put on your playlist. Like, it's like, if you want to listen to it, you got to go listen to the whole thing. It's all one track.
You got to buy in.
It's the closest you get to a live show right now.
Yeah, that was the whole reason why we... Or a part of the reason why we're doing that, because it was supposed to kind of represent what a live show would be like for us, you know? And it's a little bit... It's a little rowdy. I mean, the last song is the best song. On that one, come on.
So it's kind of like a separate songs, but melded together.
Yeah, it transitions like how our shows usually do, and that was kind of supposed to represent that. And like, you know, at our shows live, we tend to kind of transition in between each one, go like little noises in between, little diddlies, little instrumentals, whatever it is. And so in Life with Pam, it does that as well. So there's like, it's all supposed to kind of transition into one and kind of feel like one show.
That's awesome. On Bandcamp.
It's on Bandcamp.
I wanted to emphasize that it's on Bandcamp.
She's on Bandcamp.
That's right.
Pam. Yeah. Pam lives like two blocks away
from
here.
She lives two blocks away from here.
There is an actual Pam.
Oh, yeah. This is amazing.
She's a real woman.
She's
an amazing woman.
Is the song really about Pam's life?
It's not about Pam's life. It's about life with Pam.
Nice.
I was living with Pam last year.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she was a roommate, so we... So it was just an interesting experience being like on tour and then coming back and hanging out with Pam. And she's an older woman and kind of lived quite a wild life back in New York back in the day. And so it was just kind of this hilarious contrast. And so, yeah,
like showbiz, where it's like you're in showbiz, out on tour, and then you come home with this person that was in showbiz, like in the heyday of like what showbiz is, and it's like we're living together, but like what does it mean?
Yeah. That's awesome. That's actually curious. Really cool. Yeah,
so Pam knows about the song.
Yeah, I actually.
Who broke it to her?
I went over to the house and I showed her the whole thing and gave her the rundown, and she got teary eyed and she was just so
sweet.
Yeah, I imagine that was an amazing moment.
Yeah,
lovely lady.
So the album cover
is
like a lemon, and that she has a big lemon tree in the backyard.
Yeah,
that's kind of like was like the the kind of the symbol of Pam, so that's where all that comes together.
Did a photo shoot back there at her house. It was great.
There you go, there you go. And
Pam kicks ass.
Just saying, Pam.
Pam's dope.
Thank you, Pam, for inspiring a great record.
Yeah, Pam's awesome.
And to be honest, I kind of wanted to briefly just kind of, before I ask the last question, I wanted to briefly touch on the fact that you guys have done some collaborations with Cascade and his crew. You guys got an awesome commercial placement. We could talk about Sync, License, Sing, and what was it for? It was for
Jack Daniels.
Jack Daniels. You got a Daniels commercial placement, which is amazing. Dare I say, I think as we all want to aspire to be bigger, but from my perspective, you guys are some of the bigger artists that we've had the opportunity to have talked to in person.
You got to try a lot of art.
Yeah, no, it's like maybe, but at the same time, I think it's really awesome because we talk a lot about like local bands and kind of escaping out of whatever it is, getting big where you are locally versus leaving and kind of the balance between that. There's so much that we could talk about. So I wanted to sum it up in all just a couple questions. One is, what advice do you have to anybody that's listening right now, whether an artist, producer, and as well as what is the future of Sego after that?
Advice as far as kind of the business tip of
anything,
things?
Anything, yeah.
Go to trade school.
ITT Tech.
DeVry.
No, I think one of the most helpful things that I ever figured out throughout this whole process was kind of motion. Like the most stuff that happened for us was when we were just doing stuff. Yeah. And that sounds overly simplified, but we would just self-book a tour, and then we met our booking agent. And then we would just hammer it out and try to meet people in L.A., and we finally, like, playing shows around L.A., we found our manager, we found our publisher, we started building the team. But I think it's easy to get caught in a trap of, like, I got to do it this the right way. I'm sure you've heard that. And there is it's good to be smart with what you're doing, but I believe that just doing begets doing, and you end up crossing the paths that you need to when you're getting out there. And so just putting stuff out, getting on tour in and of itself, it might be not as efficient as you want it to be, but it does something, especially when it's so, right now it's so inundated with artists and TikTokers and influencers.
Yeah, I love how you said doing begets doing.
Yeah.
Boots on the ground.
Yeah, just putting one foot.
What about you, Tom? Do you have any advice to anybody that's listening?
No, not really. But I just know that we love what we do, and that's what we strive for. Like, anything that we come up with, we try to keep ourselves interested first. Because we like what we do, and as long as we like what we do, then we feel like it's going to be cool for other people to listen to, because we feel like that comes through as like our genuine interests and like what we're stoked about. So I don't know. My only advice was to just figure out what you enjoy doing and just keep doing it.
Yeah, be selfish.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's the biggest thing.
What was the quote that I heard recently? A reasonable man will adjust himself to the world. An unreasonable man will adjust the world to himself. Therefore, all progression is based off the unreasonable man.
Interesting.
And I am unreasonable.
There you go, there you go. And there has been a lot of progress. Like,
no, and
you guys have really pushed that music. It's been awesome.
We've been together for a long time now, since the Provo days. 2007 is when we started playing together in bands. And we've always just looked at each other and like, are you still in? Are you still excited? Yeah, are you? Are you? Okay. And the minute that conversation goes the other way, we're just going to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
Derek, do you have anything to add as far as like advice to anybody that's listening, any young bass players or anybody else?
I mean, I've learned that a huge part of I don't know, whatever, doing whatever we're doing is just kind of being a road dog, too. That's like a huge part of it. You kind of got to be able to, at least in the beginning, like just do whatever it takes. And whether that's sleeping in the middles of aisles of car seats in a truck or whatever, wherever that was, that horrible bus we were in, eating only green room food, having a nap for supper, whatever it is, like, you kind of have to just do anything in order to get what you want. And that's, I feel like, what they've taught me and what I've learned in it is, like, oh, shit, I gotta step up and, like, I gotta let go of all those things I'm comfortable with and just be dirty, be gross, be tired, and keep working constantly.
Play the hell out of that bass.
Play the hell out of the bass. And kind of what Spencer said, like, always moving forward. Like, just no matter what, always put something out, always be touring. Just kind of be there, always.
Yeah.
Just keep on doing it and be recognized. And I feel like that was the biggest comment we got from people was like, oh shit, they're still touring? Like, they're still on tour? It's like, yeah, I mean, we're just going to keep going out and keep doing it. And
so I think there's a couple points out of that, which is, one, what Tom said, like, do you love what you're doing enough to be willing to do that?
Exactly.
Because you also talked about how you were from, what, Santa Monica, Santa Barbara?
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara, and you were being prideful, and you decided to finally allow this Utah boys to, like, audition, and then you got told no. Like you really like them. Like, that's awesome on y'all that you convinced Alyssa, right?
I do really like them, and I love them as people, and I think that's a huge part, too, is the way we tour and stuff. I feel like it's pretty... It can get pretty gnarly, but it also makes us really close, too. And that sounds so cheesy, but, like, we are really close, and we're... I mean, I consider them my family, and, like, that's a huge part of it as well. And, like, you just have to collectively be... We do check on each other, too, sometimes. That's important. It's like, hey, like, are you still good? We're all still good, and, like, let's just keep going and keep moving forward and just freaking be there all the time. Be in people's faces all the time.
Well, we're such road trash that when we brought Alyssa along, she fit right in. So.
Yeah, I am very much road trash too. And, you know, at Santa Barbara is whatever, but like I feel right in with these guys. It's just
that is
like,
amazing.
So do you guys like sleep in Glad bags? Like, that's the sleeping bag right there.
I mean, we would not put that past the situation.
I mean, that's what it takes. And to be honest, dare I say, like, if you don't put in that much work, are you really competing?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
this day and age is way too competitive.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's funny. I had this conversation today with a friend of mine from New York who we were discussing how it's hard to make money in music because music is awesome. Otherwise, it would be, you know, like everyone wants to do something that's awesome to make money, and hence the competition is so high that it's really hard to make money in music. And that's like, and understanding that right away, that it removes kind of like the underdog thing where it's like, oh man, this is just like unfair. You know, how is this unfair? It's like, well, because it's awesome.
Absolutely.
And you got to remind yourself that actually this is sweet that we get to do this in general. And then when we do get Jack Daniels stuff or we do get cool tours, it's doubly, it feels like very much, I don't know. Actually, I'm not going to say it. Not going to say it.
No worries. Let's go into right into what is the future for Sego.
But this year has reminded us how awesome it is since we haven't been able to do it. And like, you know.
In a live sense. Yeah.
In a live sense, and like how much we do that so much. Like, we're usually out and about a lot. And like, since we haven't been able to do it, it's a nice reminder. So I'll take this last year, 2020, worst year ever? No. Great learning lesson.
Great
perspective shift.
And it has, I mean, as far as things coming up or things that have been happening, it's just a big opportunity to record and write nonstop. And I'm sure you guys here at the studio have noticed that it's when you're not touring, you actually have more opportunities to write and record. So we've been busy in the old studio. It's not exactly as nice as this, though.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you. But, yeah, we'll just keep doing what we can do until we can do what we do again.
Yeah.
I guess.
That's awesome. Well, one last time, take a listen to Sego on Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, anything, anywhere. And the new record, The Life of Pam, on Bandcamp. Pay the artist directly, support them. Bandcamp, Life of Pam. Is that right?
Yeah.
Life of Pam. Check them out.
Just
enjoy
remember,
it.
A good mustache makes a good potential singer.
Yeah, that opens the door.
But an even better drummer.
There you go. And on that note, my friends, happy mixing and stay saucy.
Saucy.
1, 2, 3.
If you'd like to take advantage of my free guides and online videos, please check out links.dekmixes.com. That's links.dekeimixes.com.
Good.
Episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at HereYouAreAZ.com.